Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to continue talking about the individual versus the collective. But this time we'll talk about it from a slightly different angle, more or less focusing on how the collective attacks the individual. And before sharing more on that, we would like to start with some comments on three recent stories which actually tie into what we're saying, so it's not really a digression. So let's start with these recent stories. One is the obvious one. You could say at the time of this recording, today, this day is the day of the so-called coronation of Chuck the Turd. We'd like to kind of briefly or quickly talk about what this represents and what it means. We've briefly mentioned it before, but we'll just mention some details again. And by the way, Chuck is a nickname that is used mostly in America. As far as I understand, I don't think it's used in the UK at all as a short form of Charles. Interestingly enough, I read somewhere, and I'm not 100% sure if it's true. It sounded true, or read as if it was true. I saw a comment written by someone on Quora.com, that website where people ask questions and they get answers. And someone asked how the question was, why do Americans frequently call someone named Charles Chuck, but the English don't, even though Charles is a common English name? And there's this person named Jan Layton, who has a BA in English from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and an author, and has answered 4,000 questions. So it sounds like someone who didn't just out of nowhere sit down and type something. Apparently she knows her stuff, I guess. The thing is, she said the name Charles in Middle English, circa 1150 to 1500, was Chucken, Chukken. That's where the nickname Chuck stems from. I have no idea why the English don't use it today. And then she goes on to talk about why Richard is shortened to Dick, Sarah with Sally, Jack and John, and so forth. But that's not relevant at this moment. The thing is that she's stating that the name Charles actually in Middle English was Chukken, Chukken, which sounds like chicken. And I know that's not a coincidence. The thing is that the root of the name apparently is closer to Chuck than what it became later on, in other words, Charles. So that would be the apparently the official explanation as to why there's a connection between Chuck and Charles, and the fact that and instead of third, he really is a turd. So he's really Chuck the Turd. That is his real name, and the fact that he now has a an American nickname, or mostly used in America, is relevant here, because it speaks of how he has joined America in its death. Just like America is dying this year, the monarchy has also died in the UK and England, in particular. And And that's why now one of his children, Harry, is living in the U.S., married to an American crazy lady, and has this American-based kid and his crazy wife bad-mouthing him now. And that's a manifestation of that connection. There's a connection, a very bad connection between the U.S. and the U.K. now, but at least with regard to this Chuck the Turd, it is a connection of death. So now he represents the death of the monarchy. The monarchy died with Elizabeth II. She had, 70, I forget how many years, almost 70 years to do something with the monarchy to really reshape it into what it needed to be. And just like America just decided to, especially the conservatives, decided to just keep going with the same rotten foundation, Elizabeth II decided to do the same thing. And even though she had the name of a great queen, I always considered Elizabeth the First almost like in a tie for first place for greatest monarch of England with Alfred the Great. And why Alfred the Great? I don't know. It's just he was great. The name says, Alfred the Great. There was something about him. So I'm kind of hesitant to decide between the two who really was the greatest monarch of England. You could probably make a strong argument for Elizabeth the First. But the thing is that Elizabeth the First was one of the, if not the greatest monarch in British history. And Elizabeth II took her name and did nothing with it. She just continued the tradition of Queen Victoria, started by Queen Victoria, one of the worst monarchs in British history because of her nothingness. She was the queen during the time of the greatest expansion of the British Empire, but it was not an expansion promoted by her. She did not cause it. She was just there when it happened. And she instituted this tradition of doing nothing, of just a symbolic presence that really doesn't do any change, doesn't affect any transformation in the environment, nothing. Just there for the sake of being there as a superficial symbol and a tradition that actually does nothing but cost the English taxpayer or the British taxpayer tons of money maintaining a family that really doesn't do anything. And Princess Diana, when she was introduced into this royal family, and actually many people say that, Princess Di had more English royal blood in her than the actual English family, even though she was not, directly part of the English family that's part of, the current dynasty. So when Princess Di was introduced into the royal family, she was like this catalyst that was going to kind of propel the monarchy to transform from being this institution of nothingness that does nothing, that achieves nothing, it's just this empty symbolism, to doing something. And she was a little misguided in what she was trying to do, a lot of humanitarian work, but it was humanitarian work at a superficial level. But at least she was making this effort of, she didn't feel comfortable just being there and doing nothing, that there had to be a transformational effect. The monarchy had to just not only be there, but transform and make waves, like when you drop a stone into a lake and the ripple effects, the stone was there and it changed something. It changed its environment, the environment around it in the water as it arrived. And that's how Lady Di was. She was like this stone that was thrown into this stale lake of nothingness, and it caused this ripple effect because you started affecting the environment, and kind of the something in the mindset of the royal family just didn't take to it. It's like, oh no, you don't tell us what to do. You don't tell us to be different. You don't show us up. You don't expose our nothingness. And that's what led to the hatred. And Elizabeth II had a lot to do with kind of allowing that hatred towards her. And then this Chuck, son of a bitch, was unfaithful, constantly unfaithful to her. And it was almost, I would dare say, kind of like a subconscious effort in his part to undermine her because of what she represented, even though he might not understand that in his conscious mind. Maybe he does, maybe, I don't know. But I know that in my being, that's what moved him. It's like sometimes we're moved by forces that we don't understand. And I see it constantly when I interact with people. It's like sometimes people just, they don't know me. They don't know me from Adam. They have no idea who I am, what I stand for, what I believe. But when they see me, I can feel a reaction, like a very subconscious, knee-jerk reaction. And sometimes it's a reaction of hatred, just like hating me for what I am, even though they don't know who I am. But there's something in them that knows that they are in front of someone who thinks a certain way, who even though they've never heard me say a single word about anything. Maybe I'm just ordering something, or maybe I'm just crossing the street or whatever. But they see me, and there's this visceral reaction of hatred, and that is so we are moved by things that we don't understand. It's like our subconscious catches things. And we react without understanding why we're reacting in a certain way. And Chuck had this thing against Di, and Elizabeth II, Betty, I call her Betty II, had this reaction as well. So she died, and she and during her life she made sure that the monarchy would remain this empty symbolism, and anyone who dared to change that would be confronted just like Di. That's why she was ostracized, separated from the collective, in this case, the royal family, because she represented something that exposed the collective to the world in a bad way. And that's why she was shunned. She was betrayed by her husband constantly, and eventually she had to leave, and we all know the tragic story of how she died in 97, if I remember correctly, 31st of August, I think. And I remember where I was when I heard that she had passed away, which was kind of shocking. The thing is that and Elizabeth II, by the way, had a great opportunity. Like this, she was given this last chance, like to do something. But it's as if we all knew, in a sense, that she was not going to do it. But it was the chance was given to her, but more as a testimony of, okay, this is why the monarchy is going to die. And this opportunity or test came when the virus nonsense came out, when the lockdowns and all this craziness started around the world and including the UK. She could have been the voice of reason and said to Parliament and said to everyone involved that this is not the way to do it. And when the people began to protest in England, in London and other parts, I think it was mostly in London, protesting against the lockdowns and the tyranny, her subjects who were protesting for freedom didn't hear a peep from her. And she remained quiet because her mantra was, you know, stay away from divisive issues because I'm a uniter. I represent unity. I represent the royal, the British identity, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm not going to be controversial. And she did not stand up against tyranny. And she remained aloof, disinterested. And I would dare say that maybe on the inside of her, part of her knew that that things were being overdone, and that this was being taken to an extreme. I don't know. Maybe she fell for the whole nonsense about the severity of the virus, etc., and the effectiveness of masks and the 2-meter distancing. And I think I've shared this before, but it's interesting to me that 2 meters that was used, where the metric system is used, in other words, everywhere but the U.S., and then 6 feet was used as the social distancing limit in the U.S., and 6 feet is how far people dig to bury a body, and 2 meters, I think, might be the official distance in other parts of the world. So it's interesting that the measurement that was used is the measurement of how far you have to put someone behind the earth when they're dead. So it's like we were all kind of sentencing each other to death with this stupid 6 feet distance. Like, oh no, you're a corpse, so you're going to be 6 feet away from me. Or I'm a corpse and I'm going to be 6 feet away from you. It was this collective death that everybody seemed to embrace, except a few of us. And the thing is, this woman, Elizabeth II, had the opportunity to stand up and say, hey, this is wrong, what we're doing is wrong. And she could have confronted Parliament and confronted the politicians at the time about what was going on. She did nothing. And either because she was unwilling to create controversy, or because she actually fell for the lie, and either way, that proved that her office was useless, that it had served no purpose, it served no benefit. It's just a waste of taxpayer money now, and therefore it had to die, and it died with her. There is no more king or queen of England. It doesn't exist anymore. Yes, oh yes, there's going to be someone holding the title. It doesn't matter. There is no king of England anymore. No queen of England. There shall never be a king or queen of England in the way that we understand it now. It's as if the current system has been replaced with something else. There is a king of England now, but it's not the king you would think he is, or the way you would think he is. And this correlates, I'm going to say this, and this might not be pleasant to hear to some who may listen to this audio clip, but I'm just going to say it, and you take it as you wish to take it. I don't mean to offend or question anyone or confront anyone on this. The thing is that I read this story that has been mentioned every now and then about the prophecies of this, you know, the French dude, Nostradamus. And one of his prophecies has been interpreted as saying something about the current situation with the monarchy, and I wish I had pulled it up before this before recording this, but vaguely it said something like that the king would not be approved or appreciated because of the divorce. And that he would abdicate, and then someone that no one expected would become king. And people have said, oh, this applies to what's happening now and that it's for this time. And I don't know, you know, I'm not an expert on the prophecies of Nostradamus. I don't know how it works. If he kind of wrote these things and said this is going to happen in this time period, and that's how people know that these prophecies, these quatrains or whatever they were called, apply to this time period, or if it's just by some sort of interpretation, I'm not sure. But the thing is that a lot of people are attributing that prophecy to this time, and it's kind of interesting because this, you know. In a legal sense, you could say, I'm not an expert on succession rules and the like, but I would dare say that in a technical sense, Chuck III's ascension to the so-called throne, which he's not ascending to, but, you know, using this current terminology, that his, quote, ascension to the throne is actually technically invalid because he's a divorced man. And we all know how the lengths that Henry VIII went to marry someone different when he didn't like his current wife. You know, he could not divorce her because that was technically not allowed for a king or monarch to do. So we all know the story of how he kind of went the other way, you know, till death do us part. He took that very literally. And remember, for example, the story of, I forget, Edward, one of the Edwards, I think it was, the fellow who abdicated the throne at the beginning of the 20th century, because he fell in love, interestingly, with an American divorced woman. And he was not allowed to marry this woman. He was the king. Like, you would say, oh, the king can do anything. He's the king. But no, he couldn't. So he abdicated the throne to be married to this woman. He had to give it up. Well, Chuck divorced Diana. And then he married this Camilla that he had been having an affair with, even whilst married to Diana. So she's, and I imagine Camilla was divorced. I don't know. To be frank, I haven't followed the royal family. I have never really cared much for them, to be frank. But the thing is that I don't know what happened that allowed him this time to be able to quote, become king, not only whilst being divorced, and also I think marrying a divorced woman. I'm not sure if Camilla was divorced. I have no idea. The thing is that I believe that there's divorce all around, so I think technically he should not be allowed, but maybe something changed, some succession law was passed or whatever that allowed him this situation to happen, so that he can now be supposedly king of England. The thing is that there's divorce there, and this quatrain or whatever from Nostradamus mentions a king not being accepted because of the divorce, and then having to abdicate, and someone not expected taking over. And in a sense, but it's interesting that the phrasing of the quatrain says something like someone who's not expected will become king. And I believe that that isn't happening literally. The king in a wider sense are the British people. They are the ones who are becoming the king of England now. They're the ones who are being given the scepter and said, now you shall rule the land. It shall no longer be a family, a specific family of people, especially because when they had the opportunity, they didn't do anything with it. The scepter has been given to you. And it's the people, they are, in a wider sense, the king of England now. And within the people of England, those who have an ear towards the truth, those in particular are, in a more profound sense, the King of England now. And that's what has happened. And I believe that what this French dude wrote back in the, who knows when, I think the 1300s, 1400s, I forget when Nostradamus was around, but what this French fellow wrote is coming to pass in a peculiar sort of way. And interestingly, I heard that there were these crazy leftists, but it kind of crazy in a, this time in a, in a good way, I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure. But maybe their attitude is wrong, but the message is good. They had these leftists at the mall in London with the sign saying "Not Our King," and I think they were some leftists were planning to do some sort of graffiti attack on something. And the thing is that just shortly before this recording, I went online to the Daily Mail and I saw this story about people being taken, being arrested and taken to jail at the mall. You know, the police showed up and they arrested all these people, you know, that were saying "Not Our King, Not Our King," because they didn't want them disrupting the ceremony. And that was sad for me to read, because you would go, on what grounds can you arrest someone? Yeah, I can understand arresting someone because they're about to do some sort of graffiti attack or whatever. That kind of makes sense, even if I may or may not agree with the action itself or what it represents. But the thing that kind of makes sense that you would arrest, makes sense, quote unquote, makes sense from a legal standpoint. There are legal grounds for the arrest, but I don't understand what legal grounds there could be for arresting someone for having a sign that says "Not Our King," or for people protesting against the king. I mean, maybe because I'm thinking about freedom of speech, and maybe that is not as explicitly protected in England. I'm not sure. Our freedom of speech is not really that great anymore in America, so it's not as if we have an advantage nowadays. Because I live under constant this cloud of constant censorship. That's what we live in America here. We don't have the freedom to speak because we have the tyranny of liberalism, the fascism of liberalism, constantly imposing itself on people. So I don't know. So there isn't, you know, there's no Americans brag about, oh, we have the First Amendment, freedom of speech, and the British don't. And I laugh when I hear that, because we really don't have it. We don't have the right to life, because the Founding Fathers, this idiots, being the idiots that they were, did not set it properly within the Constitution. They didn't understand the concept of right to life. They really didn't understand it. And the right to life includes the freedom of speech and so many other things. But, well, that's a whole other topic. The thing is that it's sad that people who are just protesting against or just saying or disagreeing with the monarchy are being arrested, and that to me is a sign of the tyranny that this Chuck the Turd represents. And there has been a divorce, and because of that, he does not deserve to be a king. He's an evil man. Chuck the Turd is an evil man. He is evil. There is no goodness in him. He is evil. The thing is that he represents this. He has been divorced from the truth forever. And that's just like America has divorced the truth. Conservatives have divorced the truth. Liberals never even knew there was a truth to begin with. But there's divorce in the air. America is has decided to separate itself from the truth. And in a deeper sense, it's the truth divorcing America, not America divorcing the truth. It's the truth saying, the hell with you, America. I don't care for you anymore. I am shunning you and divorcing you. That's in a deeper sense, even though America, in a sense, has initiated the divorce. But the thing is that in the same way in England, and I refer to England more specifically than to the wider UK, England has also had this experience where now the monarchy has divorced the truth, or has been divorced from the truth, and is now being separated and set aside, and now the true king of England, the ones holding the scepter, are the people, and in particular, the people who are open to the words of truth. They are the king of England now, not this Chuck the Turd. And it's interesting to me also that Chuck decided to use Charles as his regnal name. I think that's how you pronounce that word. Sounds a lot like rectal, but I think that's how you pronounce it, regnal. And I had a certain doubt. I mean, do they have a choice? Like, for example, when the so-called popes, which don't exist anymore, we've talked about this briefly before, the last pope was Benedict the 16th, and he was the last pope, and everyone afterwards is just a mosquito, an annoying mosquito, and whatever words they say are the sounds of a mosquito flying. It's annoying to the ear, but it's meaningless, dribble. But popes have, every time they would ascend, because they are kings too, they're monarchs. Every time they would ascend to their a little throne, they would choose a name. So even though they were not born with a name, like Benedict the 16th was not born Benedict. I think his name was Joseph Ratzinger, German name, but he chose the name Benedict. So I said to myself, I mean, can a British monarch choose their name? And I found out online that yes, they can. I mean, they can change their name. I mean, usually they keep their given name. So if they were born James, then they ascend to the throne, they become James the whatever. And I said to myself, maybe Charles. I felt in my being, no, they can choose their name, but I began to wonder, was I correct about that? And I looked it up, and it turns out that, yes, they can change their name, their regnal name. So even though he was born and named Charles, he has the choice to choose a different name than Charles as so-called King of England. And it's sad that he chose to keep Charles, and I think it's fitting because he would be supposedly, if he were a real king, the third Charles, who's ever been in so-called power, nominal power in England, in English history, and the reason for that is because the first two didn't really do very much with the name. For example, many people don't know this, but Charles I, he was beheaded because he reigned for 10 years, I think, without parliament. He was a very tyrannical man. He wanted to curtail the power of Parliament, and wanted the king to be like the kings in Europe. He kind of hated the fact that in England he was restricted by a constitution and by Parliament, and things like that. He wanted to be like the kings of continental Europe that could do whatever they want. He believed in the divine rights of kings and all that stuff. So I think he reigned for 11 years, if I'm not mistaken, as without calling for parliament. And I think it's called the 10 years of tyranny, or 11 years of tyranny. He avoided parliament for one decade, and it's a period known as the quote personal rule of Charles I, or by his critics as the quote 11 years tyranny. And he was always short of on money, and eventually the people just got tired of him. Parliament got tired of him. An English civil war broke out between the royalists and the parliamentarians. The parliamentarians won, and they arrested Chuck the First and beheaded him. And that started the Republic, the period of the interregnum period, the period between kings, where where England and the UK, you could say, became a republic. And it was run in a sense by Oliver Cromwell. And then Oliver Cromwell passed away in 1658. Chuck the First was beheaded in 1649. So it was almost like a 9-year period during which Oliver Cromwell was the Lord Protector. He was not a king. He never accepted the term, the concept of being king or whatever. He's one of the men that I admire the most in British history. I know a lot of people don't like him, but I do admire him. And he passed away, and his son, who tried to continue with the changes, just was not good enough to do it. And then it all collapsed. And then Chuck the Second, the son of Chuck, who had been able to escape and was king of Scotland for a short while, and then he fled to continental Europe, and then he came back, and because Cromwell's son was kind of weak and didn't know what he was doing, Chuck the Second was able to gain back the throne, and the monarchy was restored. And Chuck the Second was not as tyrannical as Chuck the First, because he knew better, but he was still he did a lot of bad things, and his personal life he was a terrible man. He's known as the quote Merry Monarch, but it's a reference more to his kind of lechery. He actually acknowledged at least 12 illegitimate children from a whole bunch of women, and he left no legitimate children. And because of that, he was eventually succeeded by his brother, James. I think I forget, but he might have become James the Second, or I don't know. Forget what. He was James the Second, his brother. But the guy was a lecher, and sleeping with woman after woman, and impregnating them. Very nasty piece of dirt. So you have Chuck the First, a tyrant and traitor. He was, considered a traitor and executed. And then you have this period, the Cromwell period, where England was on its way to becoming a democratic republic, in a deep sense of the word. But Cromwell faced a lot of issues, and he was unable to really kind of set things. It's as if England was not ready to be this democratic republic. And England went back to kings the old-fashioned way. and then Chuck II came back, and he was a wasteful spender, and a lecher, and a terrible piece of dirt. And it's interesting that Chuck the Third decided to become the third in this great line of worthless Chucks. And it's also interesting that he took the name of the kings of the period, who kind of are the bookends of the period when England had no king. And it's fitting because now England has no king anymore. So it is fitting that he kept the name Charles and said, I'm going to be Chuck the Third, despite my two previous predecessors not being that popular. And no one took the name Charles because of these two guys. You know, they were kind of ashamed to the name. And that's why had never been another Charles in the throne. But he chose to keep the name, and it's fitting because he is a lecher in the sense that he, just like Chuck II, because he was unfaithful to Diana with Camilla, and he's also a tyrant, just like Chuck I, because this guy is he's a leftist fascist. He is a tyrant, and if he had his way, he would impose a lot of the nonsense about, you know, from the European Union. I'm pretty sure that he hated Brexit. Maybe I'm wrong on that one. I don't know if they ever made a comment on that. And that's another thing. I'm not sure if Betty II ever really said anything about Brexit. It's such an important event for the nation. And instead of standing up for something, I could be wrong on this. But as far as I know, she didn't really take a side on any of that. But I do believe that Chuck the Third, in his heart, hated Brexit. And he is, I don't have the link to that right now, but I remember a recent story I read about him wanting to work together with the World Economic Forum or whatever, the WEF, this evil tyrant organization in Europe. And I'm sure he was more than happy, Chuck the Third, with the lockdowns and with all the imposition and with all the forcible injection mandates and all this stuff. I'm pretty sure that he was very happy with that. He is a leftist tyrant, disdainful, worthless son of a bitch who does not deserve to live. And he will be dead soon. I'm pretty certain that he will not live for a long time. And he will die in a figurative sense, I guess, very quickly. He's going to be irrelevant. And the thing is that he is not the King of England. And that's what we wanted to say about that. And I thought it was going to be like a 5-minute comment, but it has turned a lot longer than that. And I believe there was maybe a purpose to that. Okay, so having briefly talked about that, briefly in inverted commas, I would like to just mention a couple of other things. One is the Omega Lock, and you may wonder what is that? And I didn't know what that was until I heard it on the news. I was flipping through the channels, having nothing to watch, and when you have nothing to watch, sometimes you end up on strange channels, and I ended up on the Weather Channel, the Fox Weather Channel, and they were talking about this Omega Lock pattern that we've had in America this past week. It's been this high pressure center that's sandwiched in between two low pressure centers, and the high pressure center is right in the middle of the country. And it hasn't been able to move because the two low pressure centers, there's like these perfect conditions where the two low pressure centers have and kind of become stuck, and they leave, and the high pressure center cannot move. And we've had, and because of that, that created a whole bunch of weird things, weird weather phenomena across the country, floodings and snow in Marquette, Wisconsin, I think. Marquette, Illinois. Marquette is in Illinois, I think. But there was a lot of snow in Wisconsin. I know that for sure. Like 2 feet, like 19 inches of snow in May. And these strange weather patterns and all, because this thing just will not move. And here in the Northeast, in the New York area, it's been cold, unseasonably cold, and cloudy, and gray and rainy. We had a couple of days where it was just raining, and the rain just wouldn't stop. I felt like I was in Seattle, you know, just raining. And it's because of this Omega lock, and I believe it's very symbolic, because Omega, as you may know, and why they call it the Omega lock, because if you saw the map of the high pressure front and the low pressure front, you would the meteorologists would see like an Omega kind of being formed with the high pressure. Center. I don't know how to describe it, but I could also see it in the map. It was like this Omega type shape, and Omega, the letter Omega, you know, the Greek letter, is like an inverted horseshoe with like two little things sticking out at the bottom on either side. If you know what the Omega letter looks like, I think you know what I mean. But it kind of looked like that. So they called it the Omega lock, and they said, we don't know, because they kept asking, how long will this last? And they were saying, we don't know. It's very unpredictable when these Omega locks happen, or these types of phenomena happen. They can't predict how long it will stay. No one knows. And I felt there was like something even like very meaningful about that. It was like almost like supernatural how that front just formed itself and stayed there, locked in place, and no one knowing how long it was going to be. And to me, that was so symbolic of America and its stagnation. It got stuck, you know, with the Founding Fathers stuff, just got stuck there and never progressed out of that. And Omega is, as you know, may know, is the last letter of the Greek alphabet. It's the Greek equivalent of the English Z. So it's the end of the road. And that's what that was representing. That because America, you got stuck, it is the end of the road for you. This is your Omega. You are done. And that's what that Omega lock represents. And the fact that it happened at the end of April, the beginning of May, is very significant, personally, to me. And if you've read the website where these audio clips are posted, you may know why I'm saying that. That time period, the end of April, beginning of May, is very significant in the website, to the website. This thing happened kind of like it feels like this confirmation of things. I feel like I shouldn't say any more about that, but okay, so now let's move on to the other story. And I hope this is going to begin to tie into the individual and collective a little more. And by the way, I just want to emphasize the thing about the people being arrested for protesting against the king at the mall in London. Is kind of also very symbolic of how tyrannical this Chuck the Turd is. He is a tyrant at heart. You know, if he could, you know, if he didn't have the restrictions he has, he would gladly become a tyrant and rule England and impose all the leftist agenda on England at will, just like Chuck the First would have done. But obviously he can't do that now, but it's in his heart. He is a dictator, a tyrant. He's an evil man. He's evil. An arrogant and stupid man. He's not only evil and a dictator, he's an idiot. I think that if he ever had a conversation with someone, I mean, he would not be able to string a cogent sequence of thoughts together to show any sort of intelligence. He does not have that. He is an idiot and a tyrant. You know, that's the worst combination when you're a tyrant and you're an idiot. That's the worst combination that you can have. Like someone used to tell me a long time ago, there's nothing worse than an idiot with determination, because those are the people who... who go around imposing idiocies, and it seems like no one can stop them. And so the thing is, the other thing that we wanted to talk about is a story that's been going on here in the New York area. It has to do with this man that died on a subway car. What happened? The name of the fellow. And the name is also so meaningful. Jordan Neely, a black man. He died at the age of 30, which is very young. It's very sad in many ways. But what happened to him is he used to be a Michael Jackson impersonator. So he would go on, you know, be around subway stations and do his thing, you know. Do the Billie Jean dance and the moonwalk and all that stuff. And he would dress up like Michael Jackson and go hee hee and do his thing. And apparently he was pretty good. And I saw some videos of him, like videos that people took of him like years ago. And apparently he was pretty well known. I didn't know about him, but apparently a lot of people who rode the subway became acquainted with this guy. So he was kind of known to a lot of people, the Michael Jackson impersonator. But something happened to him, and I could be wrong, but I think I read somewhere that he, his mother was strangled or something to that effect. Some important person in his life died in an unnatural way, and I think it was by strangling. I could be making this up, but I bungling the actual story, but I believe the message is more or less that. So if I'm wrong on the details, I apologize. But the general idea is the same. The thing is that he had some sort of breakdown, and he went, he turned into a schizophrenic crazy person. And he then completely transformed. And I want to share the something that I found just today, I saw a link on a conservative website that mentioned this, and I hope I can find it. Oh my goodness. I'm trying to find it, but it had to do with someone had written about him 9 years ago. I need to find this and share this with you. I think I found it. Yes. I'm going to read what something wrote 9 years ago. And the name of the person apparently who wrote this is Corazón de León. And Corazón, as far as I know, means heart in Spanish. And de León, that's a Spanish name, just like Ponce de León. So this sounds like a Hispanic person, or maybe, who knows, maybe it's a Filipino person, who knows. So someone called Hart, in Spanish, de León, wrote on Reddit. This is a post on Reddit from nine years ago. She wrote, and I'm assuming it's a she, because Corazón, Hart, sounds like a female name. In Spanish. The thing is, it says, try to stay away from the Michael Jackson impersonator if you see him. And then she writes, used to be all cool, dancing to MJ in the subway train, but as of late, he's become a maniac. Sometime in late spring, early summer, I saw him in the train. His radio, I can't say the word, I'll just say, his radio bleeped up, and he was angry as bleep. Cursing and bat-mouthing commuters, screaming, what the bleep are you looking at? Don't bleeping look at me. Totally didn't expect him to act as such. Ever since that day, he's just been, and it's so weird, she mentioned like a specific day, like when she saw this transformation. Ever since that day, he's just been a scary dude to me. He doesn't dress up anymore, no more dancing, just asks for money, occasionally shouting obscenities. Today, however, was odd. Sometime in the morning, on my way to school, I'm sitting on the bench and out of nowhere, hear someone just going off, cussing up a storm. It was the MJ dude. Everyone besides this guy was quiet. An MTA crew was there, but did nothing and just let him continue blow his gasket. Train arrives and I just get in the car. He's not in. Get in the car he's not in, because I'm sure as bleep not getting in the same car as him. Dude didn't even wait till he got inside the train. I was scared for the people next to him out of fear that someone was gonna fall on the tracks. And then she ends it with saying, just avoid the guy at all costs. Try not to look at him at all. Stay safe. And pics for reference. So she put up some pictures apparently for reference so that people would know the guy. And I just found it annoying that she said, stay safe. It's one of the people who know me know that that's one thing you don't say to me. You don't tell me to stay safe. It's one of the most grating and annoying phrases in the English vocabulary to me. Because of all that happened with the lockdown, you know, oh, stay safe. You know, there's a virus out there that's going to kill you. Stay safe. 6 feet, 2 meters, you know, and all that nonsense. So, but she apparently that phrase has been in use for quite a while. So the thing is that this is the backdrop of this guy. So he had some sort of breakdown. Apparently, his mother was strangled to death, if I understand the story correctly, and he collapsed. And I saw the videos of him dancing when he was still, you know, when he had his head together. And he did a pretty good job of impersonating Michael Jackson. So it's kind of sad what he became, very sad. It really breaks my heart to see what happened to him. But the thing is, he became dangerous. And as far as I know, this fellow was arrested 42 times, you know, since that time when he had this transformation, you know, over this 9-10 year period, 42 arrests. And lots of even minor things. Like for example, it says here, many of Neely's arrests were for alleged violations of local law, the spokesperson said, and involved lower level offenses, such as having an open container of alcohol in public. But, and interesting, this 9 year thing, New York, began its like death 9 years ago, exactly 9 years ago. And it was and it's ironically, I came back to New York shortly before the death period started. New York began to die on November of 2013 when Bill de Blasio, or DeCamio, as many of us call him, was elected mayor. A worthless piece of trash. A rubbish, leftist, loony, disgusting subhuman. He was elected mayor of New York, and when that happened, I knew, okay, this is trouble. I had just arrived like a month or two earlier, and I said, oh, New York, I just came back, and this is how you treat me? This is, and Bill DeCamio basically was New York's version of Old Bastard, just like the country elected Old Bastard. New York elected this guy. He was the New York version of Old Bastard. Evil man. And he was useless, incompetent. Incompetent. A few weeks in, there was this big blizzard. It's as if the truth was saying, okay, let's test this guy. So this big blizzard came, unexpected, unseasonal blizzard came on New York. And the city was paralyzed. Because the guy was so incompetent that it wasn't that bad of a blizzard, to be frank. I remember it was not like, you know, 20 tons of snow coming down. It was sizable, but not that bad. You know, it's New York. It's not like we've never seen snow before, you know. So it should not have been a big deal, but it became a big deal because they didn't clean up. The city got paralyzed by the snow because the so-called mayor didn't know how to handle it. So he was just incompetent. And then the city went on a decline. I began to see things I had not seen since the 1980s in New York. It was terrible. So the city began to die. He was elected in 2013, but I don't know if he took over immediately. But you could say that his first year was 2014, which was 9 years ago from the time of this recording. So it's interesting that this guy had this transformation or deformation 9 years ago. And I know it's nothing is coincidental. Everything is connected. I wish people would understand how connected everything is. We don't see it, but everything is interconnected. So this guy had his breakdown 9-10 years ago, and ever since then he's been and I think one of his arrests involved, or one of his crimes involved hitting a woman in the face. So the guy was violent, verbally violent, but also at times physically violent. And what happened was that he got on a train car, and he started threatening people. And one of the people he threatened was this Marine, this white fellow. His name, I think, is Dan, Daniel. Oh, I remember remembering to remember, but I don't remember. Oh, Daniel Penny, that's his name. He and a couple of other passengers who got fed up with this situation, grabbed him, and this Daniel Penny, this white former Marine, and he kept being mentioned as the former Marine, Daniel Penny, and I knew that was significant. If you listen to the previous audio snippet, you know what I mean. The thing is that this former Marine did a chokehold on him, and while he was holding him with the chokehold, bringing him down to the ground, there were two other people trying to subdue him. And interestingly, one thing no one seems to mention at all. So you see it in the picture. One of the dudes, maybe he isn't, but he, one of the fellows helping Daniel Penny looks black to me. And maybe it's just the image that is shown, but or maybe not, yeah, he looked black to me for some reason. Interesting. But the thing is that he, it's basically two or three white people who tried to work to subdue him. And And the thing is that he kind of went unconscious, and they took him to the hospital, and he ended up dying in the hospital. And why am I talking about all of this? There's a reason. He was a former Marine, and he used the chokehold that they are taught in the Marines. And I hope you remember in the previous audio clip when I went off on how I despise the Marines, that there's something wrong with them because they define their identity from their collective. They have, you know, everybody in the military has this connection to the collective military in a sense, but the Marines have it in an even more pronounced way, in a more deformed way. They take pride in the Marines, like in more than the other branches do, you know, about their own branch. And that's why, you know, we were talking about this lawsuit, the Camp Lejeune lawsuit, and a lot of the former Marine families were concerned about filing a lawsuit because they thought it might be a lawsuit against the Marines. They didn't want to sue the Marines because of their loyalty, you know, Semper Fi, always faithful, you know, faithful to the Marines. And this lawyer in the commercial, the advert, was saying, no, 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 don't worry. We're going to get the money from the government, not the Marines. And we were talking about how ridiculous that whole thing is because there were Marine generals and whatever negligently killing their fellow Marines, and they are not going to be prosecuted or penalized in any way. And so now the government, all of us are going to pay for this. All of us are going to pay for what the Marine generals or whatever allegedly did, if they did anything. So the thing is that the Marines have this culture of collectivism. And the thing is that he did this chokehold on this guy who came and threatened him. And he did it using the techniques of the Marines. It's as if he was saying, I'm going to show him what a Marine does in this situation. His identity was that of a Marine, and he did this chokehold that he should not have done because choking is associated with a mindset of oppression. That's the deformation of the organizer mentality. That's too long to explain maybe here, but those who read the website where these things are posted may know what we're talking about. And he was doing this unrighteous oppression on this guy because he didn't know how else to do it. And he did it out of pride. He was doing it, and I'm pretty sure that he was saying, I'm a Marine, I'm a Marine. And as a Marine, I'm going to use Marine techniques taught to me by my great Marines, fellow Marines, to subdue this man who is threatening us here in the subway car. And he ended up doing it too hard, and the guy passed out, and then he ended up dying. Well, we don't know exactly. I don't know if the cause of death was directly the chokehold, but I think the chokehold triggered something. But why am I talking about all of this? Because first of all, it's this affirmation that he's not this Daniel Penny guy is going to. And he's being, he may be charged with a homicide and everything. And now I heard that there were protests in New York City over this, you know, and all these leftists, you know, all another, you know, Black Lives Matter and all this stuff. And, you know, they don't take the context of everything that happened. They don't care about the story of this guy being arrested 42 times and everything. They just, oh, a black man being killed, an innocent little, you know, a sheep, a lamb being violently killed by a racist white man. So they go with all their nonsense and all that. So he's going to be exposed to all this, and he might end up in jail. Who knows if the Uncle Tom DA, worthless little son of a bitch, who is the so-called DA of New York, will, you know, I think he might end up prosecuting him, and he might end up either going to jail or spending a whole bunch of money and time dealing with this situation. And you would say, well, it's not his fault. He was trying to defend himself and whatever, and maybe protect himself and protect other passengers. But and yes, there is a validity to that. I'm not against him and the other two passengers having worked to restrain him. But the problem is that he went a little too hard on it. And why was he doing it too hard? Because he was identifying with the collective at that moment, the collective of his Marine past. And he was using a technique that was not appropriate for that moment. Yes, it was okay. It was necessary to choke it, but he kept choking him and choking him and choking him and keeping the chokehold on him when all they needed to do was just continue to restrain him. And his idea was to make him pass out. That was the whole plan of it. But why did he end up killing him? Because it was a manifestation of how when you use these organizer oppressive techniques, see, there's a conflict between the visionary and the organizer. There's always been. The visionary is disorganized. The visionary is always envisioning new things and defying current structures and current organizational methods. He's thinking outside the box. And the organizer wants to keep everything in the box, within the box, because that's how you keep things organized. And there was this clash. And this guy, the guy who was killed, he was a visionary. He had the visionary personality. That's what I'm trying to say. That's why he was artistic. You know, visionary people are more artistic. That's why he was doing the Michael Jackson thing and all that stuff. And then his mother got strangled. The choking is a manifestation of the organizer mindset going awry. That's what organizers do. Organizers choke people. They choke the life out of people because that's how they restrain excessive or unorganized or uncontrolled motion. It's like, it like chokes people, it organizes them, it snuffs the life out of them so that they will stop moving and doing crazy things to the organizer's eye. And this guy was acting in this mindset to control this out of control visionary who had gone literally crazy. And he didn't know when to stop, and that's why he ended up killing him. He didn't have the ability to think beyond the natural level and say, okay, I have to think outside the box myself now. I was taught this technique, and he used it without thinking. He used it, and that's what organizers do. They impose ideas and restrictions without thinking about context, because to them it's the procedure. You follow the procedure no matter what. You don't ask any questions. You don't think about other things. You just follow the procedure because that's what organized people do. And he didn't think in the context. Okay, he was restraining. You can see in the video that the guy was not moving that much anymore. You didn't need to choke him and make him unconscious anymore. You just had to control him. And if he had been listening to the truth and hearing the truth, rather than just hearing literal superficial truth, the truth that he had been taught in his mind as a Marine, he would have heard the truth saying to him, okay, start speaking softly to him, to the Jordan guy. Instead of choking him, just loosen him up, loosen the chokehold, keep him restrained, and start speaking peace to him. Peace to him. Because that's what that guy needed at that moment. Because this guy was possessed. This guy had something in him. He was out of control. And he had to calm him down with soft words and say something to him. And he would have felt the trapped soul inside this guy. He would have felt it. The guy... You know, I'm sure he didn't know this was the Michael Jackson impersonator, but if he had been listening to the truth, he would have perceived, okay, I have to do something different now here. And he would have started, I don't know, even singing something that would have ended up being a Michael Jackson tune or something, just saying soft words to him. That's how he needed, because he had been restrained, but to him, he was just like the enemy that had to be put down and silence and restraint. And that's how he ended up killing him. And now he's going to pay the consequences because he acted at the collective. When you start thinking in the collective, you start thinking superficially too. because the collective starts giving you a set of decrees. You're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do the other. And then you start following it because your identity is bound to the collective. So you start doing everything the collective tells you to do, and you do it in a superficial way. And because you're doing it in a superficial way, then you miss out on the deeper truths. And then when there are times when the collective's rules or suggestions, they're not suggestions, they're orders, but let's use the word suggestions just for now. The suggestions of the collective sometimes do not apply to all circumstances, and you have to think outside the box because there's a deeper truth that you have to discover or become aware of. But because your mind is trapped in the collective, you just can't see that, and you just keep acting on what the collective has taught you to do. And that leads to what happened here. I really have very little, I have a little bit, but not too much compassion for this guy, because if I had been in that situation, I would have done things differently. And I have been, and I go to New York all the time, and I have been confronted with, you know, different things, but I would have acted differently because I would have realized, no, that the key here is more than just controlling him, is to control the environment. And that is the key. And you change the environment, you change everything. And that's one thing that people don't understand, especially conservative Christians. They never understood this. They always thought that you change things by imposing superficial restrictions and laws. And that's why and this kind of leads to the other thing, related thing we wanted to talk about. And I saw this today, shortly before this recording, and I felt it was appropriate or related or meaningful that I was finding this today. I'm going to read the story from the Gateway Pundit very quickly. It says, billboards pop up all over the country with three words that are sure to cause the devil a headache. Billboards sharing the same three words are popping up all over the country. Those words may anger secular atheists, leftists, and Democrats in equal measure. What's more, they are sure to anger the devil himself. Why? Because these billboards proclaim the ultimate universal authority of Jesus Christ. Simply but profoundly, they read, quote, Christ is Lord. The ads were bought and paid for by Christian publisher Canon Press as a promotional pre-order campaign for prominent Moscow, Idaho pastor Douglas Wilson's new book, Mere Christendom. And so far, the ads have appeared or will soon appear in Moscow, Spokane, Washington, New York City, interestingly, Porto Alegre, Brazil, Nashville, Tennessee, Taylor, Texas, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Greenville, South Carolina, and Houston, Texas. And they show this picture of the billboard. It's this big billboard with a black background and white letters. And it, in big letters, it says, Christ is Lord. You know, those types of billboards that you can, they're way up high in the air and that you can see from a distance. And it says, according to the official Mere Christendom website, if 20 boxes, a deluxe edition of the book that comes with additional items, are ordered from the same zip code, Canon will pay for a Christ is Lord billboard in that area. And then he says, when a foreign army has surrounded their enemy, they paper the town to announce their victory and call for total surrender, unquote, the website reads. And then he says, this is our campaign for Mere Christendom. We're not campaigning for the election of Jesus. He's already on the throne. We want to help you notify your town and local leaders, unquote. In the book, Wilson argues that the world's nations must abandon secularism in favor of unabashed Christian leadership in government. And it keeps going, and that and it says Jesus is the answer to every ultimate question, blah blah blah. We all, America, the Crown, the Prime Minister of Japan, must abandon the disastrous experiment of secularism. We must instead confess that Christ is Lord. He rose from the dead and ascended into heaven and reigns over our nations and theirs. Unquote. And a conservative Christian, you know, would read this and go, his heart would just go, oh yes, wonderful, oh so beautiful, yes, Christ is Lord, and we have to proclaim him, and all that, and all I go is, when I read this, is, what a bunch of idiots. And I'm sorry to say it like this. What a bunch of idiots. They, and the heart of the idiocy is in this statement, you know, that's mentioned here. In the book, Wilson argues that the world's nations must abandon secularism in favor of unabashed Christian leadership in government. So they always have this top-down mentality that, you know, we have to put Christians in government and pass Christian laws, and that's how we're going to fix the problem. But if you don't change the hearts of people, you know, you can, that's one of the problems with the abortion strategy a long time ago, for a long time. The abortion strategy was, you know, we just have to, you know, elect people who will end up overthrowing Roe v. Wade, you know, the abortion decision. And we just need to pass, elect people who will pass anti-abortion laws. No, what's the point of passing a law if the people's hearts are not changed? You change the environment and then things will change. And I can tell you, maybe I'll not go into the details of that, but I remember one day when I was in New York and I had an experience. And I have shared this with one person. And I had an encounter with abortionists. And I remember, I'm not going to go into the details, but the thing is, I started shouting things into the air. I started shouting things into the air and screaming for maybe 10 minutes, literally, in New York City, in the Soho area of New York City. And I remember screaming for 10 minutes, and then it all ended. And the police were nearby, by the way, so... and I was screaming and screaming, and then it all ended. And then I said, what happened here? But I knew that as I was screaming those words for 5 or 10 minutes, that I was changing with my words the entire environment. And then not too long afterwards, the Roe v. Wade thing was overturned. And the other, but it's only been partially kind of, the abortion thing is still happening. There's a long way to go. But what I'm trying to say is, you change the environment, and then things will begin to happen. Unfortunately, the environment cannot change enough in America to really affect true transformational change of abortion and all these other things because of conservatives, because they're still stuck in this this very limited, superficial understanding of reality. And I would say to the conservative Christians, read your Bible. You claim you believe in that book. Well, if that book is true, go read it. Go read how did the first Christians supposedly, you know, conquer the Roman Empire? You think their strategy was, oh, we need to get a Christian elected. Well, you know, you couldn't elect an emperor, so I don't know, maybe, what, put a lot of Christians... conservative Christians in the Senate, in the Roman Senate, and that's how we're going to, you know, take over the Roman Empire. They were being persecuted and all this stuff. No, they were doing things to transform the environment according to the Bible. They were doing, according to the Bible, miracles, incredible things that were just transforming the environment. They didn't have to put up a billboard saying Christ is Lord to get people to believe him. According to the Bible, they were just doing these supernatural things according to the Bible. And they were transforming the environment. And even in the midst of persecution, they were like an unstoppable force that just took over the empire and just spread across and transformed every place that they went to. They didn't have to put up a billboard. They didn't have to try to elect a Christian senator to the Roman Senate or try to get a Christian emperor. And ironically, when they finally got a Christian emperor, the so-called Christian, the Constantinople son of a bitch, that's when the church began to decline. And we've talked about this on the website where these recordings are posted. That was the beginning of the end of all of that. Surge of Christianity, that's when it died. And then it became the stale institution that it is to this day. that got partially revived in the 1500s, but now is, you know, basically now all one big stale piece of bread. But the thing is that that's, you've changed the environment. You transform it, and you can transform it in a subtle way without, just by your presence and the words that emanate from your heart and mind, just by your actions and the way you step into things, you can transform the environment. And if enough people, you have enough, a critical mass of people transforming the environment, then things will change. Boom. Suddenly, in the blink of an eye, then things begin to change and get transformed. But all these stupid conservatives are always thinking about literal ways of doing things. And why? Because they're trapped in the collectivism. They derive their identity from their church organization, from their church system, from that collective group of traditions. So when you are stuck in a group of traditions, then you start just doing things, following literal things, and thinking that those things apply in all circumstances. You never think outside the box. You never think differently. That's why these conservative Christians cannot listen to the truth. The truth is telling them all these things that they need to change in their understanding about the founding fathers, about the Constitution, about how we can transform the country into what it was supposed and destined to be. But they don't, because they're trapped in their collective understanding, and that leads to just following literal ways of doing things. You know, oh yeah, more activism. You know, this is like handing out a big salvation tract. It's only in the form of a big billboard. And I'm not against billboards or things like that. They do serve a purpose in a certain circumstance. But this is, you know, the solution here is, you know, oh, we just need to elect people in government to abandon secularism. You know what? If you transform the hearts of the people, you don't have to fight to get Christian people elected. They will get elected on their own. It's like they will just by osmosis get elected into office. Secularism will die on its own. Remember 9/11? 9/11 was an event that transformed the environment. That's why it was so deep that people were singing God Bless America and singing the national anthem instead of kneeling to it all this time. And all this hatred of religious stuff and all this stuff just died away, and people said no. And then people started flocking to churches. We've talked about this, you know, how the pastors took advantage of all that and used it as an opportunity to just have more people in their little collective kingdom or queendom, really. And all died away. But why? We didn't need, conservative Christians didn't need to have people preaching at every corner or putting up billboards, to have people singing God Bless America when 9/11 happened, because that event was so shocking. It just sent this ripple effect across the environment, like this awakening of people to the reality of the world we're living in and how we need to change. And then people started looking for higher understanding on their own. You change the environment, and then things will happen. But these people don't understand that, so they need to forcibly try to change things. This guy, Daniel Penny, if he had just been sitting there in that train car, and the guy had come, and he would have started acting and saying things within him, or even out loud, to control that guy, he would have been able to control that demon that was inside that guy, without even needing physical restraint on the guy. And then things would have calmed down, and he would have had an effect on that guy, because that guy needs to be set free from the demon that's inside of him. There's something, it's ironic that he died of a chokehold as a result of the madness that was brought on him by the death of his mother by strangulation. You see what I'm trying to say here? You see the connection of everything. And the Marine, the stupid Marine, thinking collectively, didn't understand that, you know, he needed to change. And I'm not too sure right now at this present moment how this ties in with Chuck the Turd, but I guess we had to talk about Chuck the Turd because today is his so-called coronation. But in reality, the king, the real king of England, are the people of England, and more specifically, or more strongly, you could say, the people who are listening to the truth in England. There are a few, but they are there. And they are the king of England now. Because the environment is transformed by people sometimes that you cannot see or who are not visibly acting, like, you know, not like, like a president or some dignitary or some MP or anything like that. It's these people who are transforming the environment, and the kings of England are now with the scepter, and they have the authority to transform the environment of England and have England fulfill its purpose and its calling as a nation. And it doesn't matter that Chuck the Turd is coming in and pretending he to be the king. There is no king of England or queen or monarch or whatever of England as there has been before. It's over. It died with Elizabeth II. There was a divorce, a separation, and this guy is a manifestation of that divorce. And he has no authority anymore. He does not have the power to transform the environment, just like the Hispanic turd that's in the Vatican right now. At the time of this recording, he's a meaningless voice. Every time I hear that he said something, it's like, I don't care. I couldn't care less what he said, whether it was good or bad, outrageous or interesting. I couldn't care. He's a mosquito. That's all he is. An annoying sound, but he's irrelevant. It's like a mosquito. There's no relevance in him. Just the annoyance of his sound. That's all he is. And this is Chuck the Turd. He is restricted to being a mosquito forever. The rest of it, for the rest of his life, and then when he dies and burns in hell for all of eternity, that's all he's going to be, the big mosquito. And the ones who have the power to affect transformation in the environment of England are the people of England, and more specifically, the people who are listening to the truth. And I think that's why we were trying to get at in all of this. And the thing, you know, and this ties in a certain sense with the Omega Lock thing, because the Omega Lock was the environment. It's like something was placed in the environment to symbolize the death of America, how we have come to an end. People who are connected to the truth can transform the environment and have the environment reflect the reality that people are pretending not to see or who are trying not to be aware of. I know that we said a lot of different little things. And one last thing, Jordan Neely, you know, crossing the Jordan. But instead of crossing the Jordan, the black people chose to kneel to the national anthem to protest a whole bunch of nonsense instead of dealing with themselves and the devils and the demons within themselves, within the black, quote, community, the black collective. And it's so sad. I really feel sad for this man that died. I know he was violent and all that. And I know he had to be restrained, but not in the way that he was restrained. He had to be restrained by the environment first, and then maybe some physical action. But the way this Marine did, he just did it thinking with collective natural thinking. And now he's stuck with a whole bunch of problems that he should not have done. And now this guy who may have had a chance to maybe someday recover from his demons, now he's dead. He's gone. And just like the country, conservatives have been trying to put a chokehold on liberals to control them and restrain their madness, because they are possessed people. They are literally possessed. And all that it's leading to is the death of the country, because they don't know you have to fight this fight a different way. When you open your heart and mind to your ears to the truth and start tying your thinking to the collective that you've derived your identity from, then you're going to start doing things. You're going to realize you need to change this. And once you start changing those understandings, those foundational understandings, and speaking them out, you start transforming the environment. And that's how America would have been changed. If enough people have been willing, conservatives have been willing to believe what we're saying about the stupidity of the founding fathers, instead of deriving their identity from their Americanism and their you know, heritage and blah, 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 if they had derived their identity from the truth, then we would have saved America, and we would have been able to see the greatness that was destined for this nation. This nation was destined for so many great things. It just grieves my heart to see how we threw it all away because we were tied to this collective understanding that limits you to natural, this natural, superficial view of things. And but now Britain, in a sense, is free. And I'd say specifically England. And Wales, I'm not sure about Scotland, but England, and I hope Wales as well, and Northern Ireland are free now to have their people, their truth seekers, transform the environment, and hopefully England will not suffer the fate of America, because America is dead. It will be dead in like a little over 4 months from now, 4 to 5 months from now. Thank you very much for listening.